So, have you ever seen the movie The Greatest Showman? I don't know if you've seen it. It's a really good movie. If you haven't seen it, I'd recommend seeing it. I'm not trying to plug the movie or something like that. I'm not getting any money from saying that, no. But please, go see The Greatest Showman or rent it at this point. It's been out for a while. It's a musical. It's a musical. And it's a musical about the life of P.T. Barnum, Barnum and Bailey, you know, the circus. It really follows Barnum and his circus and chronicles his rise from rags to riches and then sort of the inverse. The opposite happens again. And essentially, even though Barnum becomes rich, famous, probably towards the beginning of the movie somewhere, he gets down on himself because even though he's successful, he is essentially a glorified carnival barker. You know, he deals in sideshows and in the eyes of many. You know, he's just a, you know, he's not a very classy guy, even though he's a success. But out of everybody that this bothers him to be perceived that way of, he's really disturbed that his father-in-law does not really respect him. You know, he loves his wife. He provides for her and their family, but you know, his father-in-law just doesn't think that he's good enough for his little girl. This is because Barnum was born poor, and even though he was no longer poor, he would never be enough for him. So to beef up his cred, he takes on a client and a challenge. He says, "I'm no longer going to deal with sideshow freaks and all this stuff like that. I'm gonna try to do something that's gonna get respect, not only in the eyes of the world, but in the eyes of my father-in-law." He somehow, in some way, manages to book a new act. There's this woman who's a world-famous opera star, and she's respected and cultured, and she has connections. So he sees her sort of as his golden ticket to success, with a capital S. She sings a song, and it's gorgeous. It's called Never Enough. And the lyrics essentially talk about how, despite her fame and fortune, she could inherit the entire world, and it wouldn't be enough. And there's something more that she's striving for. Here's what the lyrics of the song say. It says, "All the shine of a thousand spotlights, all the stars we steal from the night sky, will never be enough. Never be enough. Towers of gold are still too little. These hands could hold the world, but it'll never be enough. Never be enough for me." I didn't subject you to me singing that, you know, this morning because it's really high. Well, the song connects with Barnum because it essentially speaks to his own issues with his father-in-law, but more, it speaks to Barnum himself, his rise and his fall. He wants more and more and more to validate him, but it's never enough. He's never enough. Now, oftentimes, I think we live in a culture where we compare ourselves to others. It's not hard to do, right? We may feel like we never have enough money or not enough power or education or we're just not good enough or we're just not enough in some sort of way. We're never enough. But in today's scripture, especially the lesson from Matthew, we hear that we are enough. We are enough. And on this baptism of Christ Sunday, when we remember that Jesus was baptized by John, I think it's an important thing for us to take away, to bring home with us, that we are truly enough. So I want to talk with you a little bit this morning about that. So those of you that have been here for the last 2 weeks know that I haven't been here for the last 2 weeks. I was on vacation for a week visiting my family in Minnesota, and that was wonderful. So thank you for everybody that helped pull the slack when I was gone. And then last week, this week, I'm sorry, I was gone for a chunk of last week as well for this, but I was in Arizona, and I was doing a program with the United Church of Christ called the New Generation Leadership Initiative, NGLI. And essentially, this is it's for 20s and 30-year-old something pastors at our first calls, and that happens to be me. So we're in our first call parishes, and the UCC invested some money in professional development, some education for us. So I was blessed with that. My cohort, this little group of 9 pastors, we were in our senior year. I've been doing this for 4 years now, 4 years. And this was our last time together. So we put together closing worship. And because I tend to be a little more techie, I had to do the slideshow for the group. So I put together a slideshow with 58 churches, all the other UCC pastors that were there. I got a picture of every one of their churches, put them together, because we wanted to talk about going to the desert and then what do you have when you're coming home, okay? What do you have when you're coming home? And I got to tell you, after seeing some of these beautiful churches that were filled with people, some churches that were in Hawaii and like California, I started to get a little bit of like church envy, you know? I love you all very deeply, but you know, it's like, oh man, Hawaii, all that good stuff, warm places. I started feeling a little bit of envy in a way. All of that is to say that pastors aren't invulnerable from this kind of stuff too, wanting to compare ourselves to others, contrast ourselves from others' accomplishments and points of contact. I think we can all relate to not feeling enough when we compare ourselves to others, though, right? Many of us have been at a holiday dinner recently with family members, friends. Maybe you've compared yourself to others or contrasted yourself against others in your family, what we've done in our families, our accomplishments, our victories, our successes, our failures. Maybe we don't think that what we've done holds a candle to other family members or friends or people that you know in your lives or people that you fantasize about. But I think we can put that to rest after today. Now, in Matthew's scripture, we hear about the baptism of Jesus. And I'll give you a little bit of insight into why I think we can put to rest that attitude about not being enough. John the Baptist baptizes Jesus at the River Jordan. And John the Baptist does this after this long speech, talking about all the people that are coming to see him, talking about the Pharisees and the Sadducees and winnowing forks and unquenchable flame and all kinds of stuff like that. He's really built Jesus up. He's really built Jesus up, who Jesus is going to be. And if we look at the scripture from Isaiah about the suffering servant, it kind of gives us a little future forecast of who Jesus will be. So that's the lens that John is preaching out of. But John the Baptist eventually baptizes Jesus after protesting. He doesn't really want to do it because he doesn't think he's worthy of doing it. And why doesn't he think he's worthy of baptizing Jesus? Because he's comparing himself to Jesus. Comparing the ministries that Jesus will do to the things that John has or hasn't done. He doesn't think that he is of enough worth to even pick up Jesus' dirty Nikes, his sandals. He says, this one will baptize with fire, but I'm baptizing with dirty river water. So right there, John's comparing himself to Jesus in some way, saying he's not worthy of baptizing him, that he's not enough, that he'll never be enough for that role. We don't know exactly how the conversation went down. I like how it puts it that John finally consented. You know, that's the short way of saying, you know, after being convinced, his arm twisted a bit, he finally consented. And he baptizes Jesus. And when Jesus is baptized, we hear that the heavens kind of open up. They open up. There's a voice from heaven. There's a dove-like spirit descends upon him. And that voice says, you are my beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Wow. It's a beautiful image that comes to mind. But here's the thing. That Greek word for well-pleased, okay? It's not as exciting as one would think. After hearing about the clouds opening up and a voice coming from heaven and this dove-like spirit descending down, the word well-pleased basically means that God's cool with it. We don't hear about God bringing gifts and having a post-Sunday baptism brunch at Perkins or something like that with John and the gang. We don't hear about God doing backflips or jumping for joy that Jesus has been baptized. No. That word, well-pleased, basically means God is content with Jesus' baptism. I might translate it, "You are my beloved, with whom I am okay." Sounds a little weird, right? That God is okay-ish with Jesus' baptism. Or does it? Now, even though John drags his feet and we hear this long, meandering speech about winnowing forks and fire and those that are coming to get baptized for the wrong reason and all this stuff, and we hear John talking up Jesus like he's the best thing since sliced bread. When you think about it, we're in chapter 3, okay? Chapter 3 of Matthew, and Jesus hasn't done much in Matthew's gospel to this point. He got born. Yes, his birth was an endangered one. Wise men sought him out, okay? And Joseph and Mary, his parents, and Jesus fled persecution by Herod by fleeing to Egypt. So he was a refugee there. And then they returned. But that is what happened. The bottom line is that Jesus really hadn't done much that we know of up to this point in the story, in those three chapters. So it makes complete sense to me for God's voice not to be overjoyed and doing backflips and seeing blue confetti come down from the heavens or something like that, but for God to say, "You are my beloved, with whom I am well pleased, with whom I am okay." Not overjoyed, not doing backflips, but enough. I think there's something really powerful to this, because each of us in our lives, you know, we have different things that we're proud of and things we're not proud of, things that we wish we would have done and things that we will never be able to do, and things that we have accomplished. We have successes and we've had failures. We've all lived very different lives, and we're a small congregation in here today, but we are very diverse in a lot of different ways in our lived experiences. And here we have God saying, "With you I am well pleased," to a Jesus that hasn't done anything in the story to this point. I think for each of us, when we get down on ourselves, when we think that we're not enough, we're not good enough, or that, like John, we're not worthy, we can remember that Jesus hadn't done anything up to this point in the story, and that God was going to use him for a lot. And not only that, it's from this story that God's coolness and okayness and contentness with Jesus and being okay with Jesus, that God sends Jesus into the wilderness to be tested by the devil and to be there for 40 days. It's out of this mention of being all right and beloved anyways that Jesus is sent into the desert and begins his ministry. Now that is a word of hope, I think. There's an old hymn, "In the Bleak Midwinter." We are in it right now. And I think, in a sense, it's a word of hope for us, because it is a time when many of us might feel like we can't measure up, or we need to compare ourselves to others, or that we're not enough, or we're depressed, or we're in a slump post-holidays in that bleak midwinter, or that we're not okay. Because here in this story, it's a word of hope for us, because God uses this one anyway for God's ultimate ministry. And that's a word of hope that we all need to hear, that it's okay to be enough. So starting this January until Lent in February, I want to begin a new sermon series that has to deal with this, called Unraveled. And there are times in between the holidays where many of us might feel like we are being unraveled, that we are in a slump, or that we are struggling. Sometimes we need to be unraveled. Sometimes we need to be unraveled from shame and fear or identities that cause harm to us. To unravel our lives is to acknowledge and grieve what's fallen apart, to allow God's newness to unfurl in the world. So I think over the next couple of months together, we'll be hearing stories and sharing them where God meets us in the unraveling of our plans and helps to unravel us into something new. I'm hopeful that these stories can provide resources for each of you and opportunities for reflection and connection and maybe some clarity too, and hope. So it's my hope for us and my prayer for us as we face into this week that we can recognize that we are beloved as well, that we are also the object of God's contentment, God's coolness, God's okayness, and that we are enough because you are.